This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to this edition of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We are recording this program on the eve of the midterm elections.
Yeah, tomorrow is election day. A lot of people have already voted. But, you know, I think it's important to talk to our kids about election day.
Yeah, it is. It's important to talk about the history of why, you know, why we do the things we do and the way that we do them.
You know, I think one of the problems we're facing in the country today is that people don't understand the basic shared values that undergird our form of government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of our sons has recently been reading the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers.
Mm-hmm.
And those were not written just for the elite. Everybody read them, and they talked about them, and they discussed them, and they debated them. And people understood why our country was making the decisions it did. They understood why the Constitution had to be the way that it was. I think we've lost that, Hal.
I really think we have, too. There seems to be a lot looser grip on just the value of the liberty that we've enjoyed.
Well, I heard a study that absolutely scared me to death.
Mm-hmm.
They interviewed a group of college undergraduates, kids at universities, and they said, you know, if the government would pay for your education, would you be willing in return to let the government decide what you would major in and where you would work and what you would do for a living? And the majority said yes.
Yeah, and that speaks to several things. On one hand, it speaks to a very casual, very loose appreciation of the value of freedom, the value of our liberty. But I think it also speaks to the desperation a lot of people feel in their financial situation.
Yeah.
You know, that when people feel their security is threatened or when people feel themselves reaching a point of desperation in their financial lives, I think that they start to value their liberty a lot less. And
and that's pretty frightening because when we value when we're willing to sell our liberty for some temporary security, we're really not free. We're at the mercy of people who want to take away our liberties, who want to be tyrants.
Well, you know, the thing that comes to my mind is the story of Jacob and Esau, about Esau giving away his birthright for a mess of pottage. Basically, I'm trading off my rights as the firstborn
for
supper. Yeah, I'm hungry. Yeah, well, what's that mean to me? And that's really where I think a lot of our fellow citizens have gone astray.
And you know, when we look forward to the future, I think we need to be really careful to teach our children those basic foundational principles, you know, that people should be making decisions about their own lives, that liberty is important, that government should be restricted in its scope in order to protect liberty, because power is a temptation to people. It's a temptation to abuse it.
Yeah.
And so we limit government so that is not abused. You know, the question, though, is how do you do that? How do you teach that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what. I'll tell you how my parents did.
How's that?
They just assumed we were interested, and they brought us into the electoral process.
Mm-hmm.
I remember standing up in the voting booth with my mom when I was, like, when my head didn't reach the bottom of the voting machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember election nights were a time of great interest to my family. My family would get party foods, and we'd all sit around and watch the returns come in, and we'd yell and boo. And I mean, I was little. I was really little. Hell, we did the same thing for the political party convention. We watched the Republican convention. We watched the Democratic convention.
Mm-hmm.
My parents talked about the issues they were debating. And as a result, I was shocked to find out the rest of the world was not interested in politics.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being 8 years old,
yeah.
Okay, on a school bus and talking about the election with my friends, and they were like, they didn't even know whether their parents were voting Republican or Democrat. And I was shocked and horrified.
Mm-hmm.
I was horrified that these kids didn't even know the difference between Republicans and Democrats.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was eight, and now I look back and I say, Melanie, that was a little unrealistic. Most eight-year-olds don't know, but I sure knew.
Yeah, that was unusual, I think. I think it's still unusual, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's rather a good thing. You know, you touched on something there earlier, just to say the Federalist Papers were not written for academic discussion. One of our sons is he's double majoring in politics at the university right now, and he was saying he was reading a review of the Federalist Papers by somebody in academia.
Who it was said, his textbook, Hal.
Yeah.
Textbook said it.
And said that it was, the tone was haughty and obscure. And you know what? It wasn't to the citizens of the New Republic. It
no.
was not. You know what? Anything written in the late 18th century is going to sound a little stiff to us because the language has changed and the level of public discourse has gone way down since then. And so, yeah, we read Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Papers, and it sounds a little different than watching an ad for your local state senator's campaign. But you know what? It was meant for the populace to read, and it's worth reading. It's worth the trouble to mine that vein of ore and to say, why do we do the things we do? And you know, I keep seeing these principles come back to the front. Like, for example, today, I don't know if you saw this because we haven't discussed it yet. I just read today that someone is seriously proposing that midterm elections are a waste of time.
Wow.
That we need to change the congressional term to 4 years and change the Senate term to either 4 years or 8 years, but make sure that all of these congressional things, that you know, the House and the Senate, they all of those elections fall on the same quadrennial
what
cycle.
What horrible
of the president.
Advice.
I know.
Because, you know, our founding fathers put together the system for a reason. Because the House was supposed to be very responsive to what's going on in the world.
Exactly.
And so the elections are every 2 years, so that if your congressman is not dealing with the issues of your life, you can vote him out of office.
Or if the party that takes the White House goes in the wrong, I mean, look at what happened in 2008. Okay, 2008, we elect a man who says, I want to fundamentally transform the country. And then in the next 2 years, they railroad the whole health care debacle through a Congress and a Senate that are controlled by his party. And so what happens in 2010, the first election that comes up after that? There's a landslide for the other party.
Yes.
They said, we don't like the direction you're going. We want to put the brakes on, and that allows the people to express something back.
Absolutely. And the reason that the senatorial elections are every 6 years, mm-hmm. and a third of the senators are reelected every 2 years.
Right.
The reason for that is to provide some continuity.
It's to counterbalance.
Right.
To keep the whole government from being swung around wildly by changing popular opinion, and rather to say, this is the more deliberative body. These are the men who are expected, men and women now, the men and women who are expected to be more calm, more sober, willing to take the harder positions that
and
may not be.
And they don't all change at the same time, so there's right. always people there who remember 4 years ago.
And everybody is not running off to go campaign at the end of the session like they, you know, really are forced to do in the House. And so, yeah, that's some of the beauties of, say it now, the bicameral legislature.
Yeah.
Okay? And, you know, you can look at other countries that don't have that. Look at, look at Canada. Look at the United Kingdom. You know, look at all of those countries using a parliamentary form of government and how, you know, the wild things that happen in those.
Oh, yeah.
In
a vote of no confidence and the whole government changes overnight.
Yeah.
You know, it's our founding fathers were really wise in the way they put together our government. And
yeah.
But our kids will not preserve that if we don't tell them. If we don't explain these things, like we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
if we don't explain what's the whole point of having,
mm-hmm.
Like the way our presidential elections work, where it's not a direct election.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are shocked by that. They don't understand the point. But if you understand, where that decision came from, Katie,
right.
Stop it. Sometimes you got to be a parent, folks. Sorry.
Sorry about that.
Give it back, Katie. if you don't explain to your children why we have an electoral college, then when it comes around that somebody wants to change it, they're not going to understand why we shouldn't change it. And so let's talk about those things with our children. Let's discuss them. So how do you do that? We do it in school. We homeschool. When our children are in high school and they study U.S. history, they read the Federalist Papers, they read the Anti-Federalist Papers. They learn about those debates in the early part of the country. That's part of our education. If your kids go to public school or they go to a private school that's not doing those things, you're going to have to do it yourself, because I'll tell you what, it's not being taught in schools. And so our kids need to understand the history of our country so they can protect our country in the future.
You are so totally right. We had one of the most, one of those proud moments. You just think, I love our kids. Homeschooling is great. God is good. One of those kind of moments this afternoon. There's a debate going on in our state about an amendment, a proposed amendment, which will change. Well, it's not going to change, but it will offer a defendant in a felony case the option to waive trial by jury.
And so we have a family Skype discussion.
Yeah.
And so we were discussing this on our family Skype discussion today, while we're all deciding how to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so tickled that the guys brought it out and said, okay, well, what are the issues here?
What are the principles involved? I mean, one of them was going back to John Locke. I mean, for goodness sakes, wow. I mean, talk about going back to the founding principles of the country. And he says, okay, there's a difference between rights and liberties. Liberties exist. Liberties, are organic. Whereas rights are something that is established in our relationship with the government. And you can take or leave your rights. Liberties just are. You can't give up your liberties. And so
and so
you have a right to a trial by jury. And he goes through this whole process reasoning from John Locke. And we have to say, wow, that's perfect. Of course, that's in keeping with the principles to say, you don't have to have a trial by jury, but you are guaranteed the right to one.
Yeah.
And the purpose of that is to have a jury of your peers to act as a stop on the tyranny of the government, the tyranny of judges, or the tyranny of the executive branch of the government. And yet, there are situations where perhaps a jury of your peers might be misled by popular opinion to your detriment.
And so, I want my children to be able to discuss the issues at hand,
mm-hmm.
and to figure out what is the right thing to do. To do that, they've got to understand the history of our country. They've got to understand the principles behind our country. But, that's pretty intimidating stuff. Okay, because a lot of us didn't have a great education in that area.
Yeah.
So when we come back from the break, let's talk about easy steps you can take
mm-hmm.
to teach your children about government and liberty.
That's right.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back. Listen. What we want to tell you about is we've got several really cool things going on.
Okay.
First of all, we're going to be in the Raleigh, North Carolina area this weekend, November 7th and 8th.
Friday and Saturday.
We're doing our boot camp 9 to 12 live.
On-site, in-person.
Right there. And, this is really cool because we only do this a few times a year. We did it in Kansas City this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really one of the most popular things we do.
That's right.
Because we're talking about that hard-to-raise age. The preteen years, 9 to 12, 13, 14,
yeah.
that age, how do you get through to them? How do you reach their heart? How do you deal with the distraction, the anger, the moodiness? How do you get through this with everybody's hair still on their heads?
That's true. But, yeah.
So
this is really popular. So if you want information on this, you need to act now. Go to our website, raisingrealmen.com/ Raleigh, R-A-L-E-I-G-H.
Yes.
Okay. And that's all your information on that. So please hurry, because that's only the 7th and 8th this month.
We would love to see you there. Also, we've got several new, very awesome resources coming out in time for Christmas.
Yes.
Make sure you're on our newsletter list so that you find out about these, because newsletter people will find out first. RaisingWomen.com/newsletter.
Yep.
Okay. Now let's talk about practical, simple things these overwhelmed, I'm overwhelmed today, parents can do to teach your kids about preserving our liberties and government. I'll tell you, easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Take your kid with you to the polls.
Yeah.
Just gather up one or more or all of your children and take them with you when you vote.
Yes.
And on the way to the polls, explain why you're voting.
Right.
That it's a privilege to have a say in the government.
Yeah.
When you get there, tell them what you're doing. Show them your ballot.
Yeah.
Mark your ballot. On the way home, talk about why you voted for who you voted for.
That's true. Sometimes they'll let people take part in the tallying of votes and ballots. I mean, I remember when I was a young person going on more than one occasion and helping them tally the paper ballots up at the courthouse. You know, other things you can do, your local party, whatever your party is, your local party will undoubtedly have some sort of gathering on election night. You can get together with other like-minded people and eat your cheese and crackers and watch the returns come in on TV with them.
And if you're not comfortable doing that, because you might feel awkward, you don't know anybody, don't worry about it. It's a lot of fun.
It is. It's a good gathering.
Around here we have barbecue, free barbecue, and you show up, you eat barbecue, and you yell and scream with everybody as the results come in. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say you're not comfortable doing that.
Okay.
Another thing you can do, you know what? You have Super Bowl parties, have an election party.
Mm-hmm.
You can invite your friends over, or it can just be your family. But go get some party food and sit at home and watch the returns coming in and talk about what it means.
Right.
Yay! This person got elected. Why do I care? Well, because they stand for this and this and this, and that's what our family believes, and we're glad that they've won re-election or that they've been elected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that doesn't seem like a big deal. Your kids may be playing in the floor. They may not be – you may not think they're paying much attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, it had a tremendous impact on me now.
They will remember that Mom and Dad thought this was important. They will remember that, hey, you know what, this once every couple of years, my parents would sit down on this given Tuesday night, and they would watch nonstop news and talk about these numbers changing bit by bit as the evening wore on, you know.
I tell you what, Hal, it had a big impact on me, a tremendous impact.
Yeah.
You know, it has never occurred to me not to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to people all the time that have the same values I do,
mm-hmm.
but have never voted.
Well, they have some of the same values. They have a lot of the values, but that's one that they don't share with you.
And it shocks me. But, you know, it had such a big impact on me that when I turned 18, I was able to vote.
Yes.
I remember standing in the voting booth with tears running down my face.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had the honor of being an adult and voting.
Isn't that great? That's a valuable thing.
You know, it is. And we're past that there for children. So celebrate tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's going to be some office that your party takes. Celebrate. Talk to your kids about it.
You know, talk about the importance of self-government as
a
concept, you know. And that's one thing that this is still a fairly new concept in the sweep of history and the millennia that we have. You know, the idea that we don't depend on a king being designated for us.
Yeah.
You know, that we're not going to be under the thumb of a tyrant, but rather we the people are going to take the responsibility to govern and to police ourselves.
That's really based on biblical values, because it assumes that men are sinful, that they're born sinful, and by nature they will abuse power that's given to them.
And therefore, if they govern together, it's just like Adam Smith talking about economics. If we all get into the market together, I'm going to recognize that my own selfishness is limited by what you're willing to allow.
Yes.
And that your selfishness is limited by the boundaries I put on you. And so together we come to an agreeable compromise that will work to everyone's benefit as best we understand it.
Which is another biblical concept, that there's wisdom in many counselors.
Right.
You know, that pull of you know, the the balance of powers is what we call in our country. That, you know, we have the executive branch, the president, the governors that are supposed to enforce the law.
Right.
But they're not, they don't make the law.
They don't make the law. They enforce the law.
Right.
Who makes the law?
The legislative branch.
The Congress, the House, the Assembly, you know, whatever, the county commission, whatever bodies you have in place at different levels of government. They make the laws, but they don't enforce the laws. The executive, think about it. What's executive means? We execute something. We make something happen.
Yes.
Okay, so they're, the executive branch takes the laws which are created by the people's representatives, and they put them into action.
Now, what's cool about that is that limits what they do, because because the Congress, because they're not the enforcers, they can't exempt themselves. They control what laws they pass, because they've got to live under them too. Somebody else is going to execute them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the judiciary limits what the executive does and judges whether it fits our body of laws.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our country, it's interesting. Up to the time of our country, the majority of countries were ruled in as rex lex, the king is law.
Right.
The king made the law, the king enforced the law, the king was the law.
But what was it that the king of France said? I am the state.
Yeah.
He said,
yeah.
The state, c'est moi,
yeah.
Le stout, or something like that.
Yeah.
He said, I am the state. I am the embodiment of the nation. You know, that's like Pharaoh.
Yeah, it is.
And that's not even, you know, it's a much better situation in the UK where they have a constitutional monarch who's even, you know, the king's power is bounded by the Magna Charta.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a useful check right there. But in the United States, our fundamental rule is that the law is our king.
Lex Rex.
That's right.
The Constitution, our fundamental law in this country,
mm-hmm.
has more authority than the executive branch, more mm-hmm. authority than the congressional branch, more authority than the judicial branch,
mm-hmm.
that everything has to fit within our Constitution. That's a protection to us.
Yes. And you know what? You have to jealously guard the separation of powers
that's
put in there, because, you know, I see, and I'm very disturbed at trends I see in our national level of party members, and for example, in Congress or the Senate, applauding when the president says, I'm going to go around the legislative branch and I'm going to create policies and execute laws
even if you agree with the policy, that's scary and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Because what he's saying is, I see myself as above the law, as above what the Constitution says. Uh-huh. Now, equally scary is the judiciary that says, you know, I don't think this law is right, so the law is going to be this instead.
Creating law from the judge's bench instead of from the halls of the legislature.
And that's scary because, you know, judges on that level, like the Supreme Court, are appointed for a lifetime.
They're appointed, they are not elected
right.
by people. They are not responsive to the people.
And so we can't get them out of office.
And see, that is not self-government if we allow the judiciary to run roughshod over the rest of the government either.
It's got to be a balance between all those things.
That's right.
And so how do you learn that?
You talk about it.
You talk about it. You study history. You look at the important decisions that have been made in the past, and you figure out why they were made. You talk to your kids about it, and even little kids can understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely your teenagers need to be reading these things, talking about it, debating it, discussing it. Your teenagers will love it because, you know, the way that the electoral process is portrayed in the media is dirty. You know, that it's all about money, it's all about it's about people trying to get power for themselves or trying to get reelected money. And when our kids understand instead that what all the decisions are and why these things are important,
mm-hmm.
it makes them a lot more interested in the whole process.
You know, it looks like we're running short on time, but I just wanted to share something that we posted out today. If you haven't seen our blog post today, I think this is important. You know, you look at all your elections, and there's no presidential race. And maybe you don't have a Senate race in your state, even. There may be nothing at a higher level than your local district's congressman, who's always running for re-election all the time anyway. So, you know, why would we get excited about all your elections? Because, you know, historically, turnout at all year elections is pretty low.
that means the people that do turn out have a much more impact on the decision. Mm-hmm. And why should we get concerned about that?
Let me tell you, because the people that you see at the top of the ticket in future years are the ones in the bottom of the ticket right now. The ones that are going to be running for Congress, for U.S. Senate, for president, got their start somewhere at lower.
Starting as a sheriff, like Grover Cleveland was sheriff of Erie County, New York.
Well, like Andrew Jackson was a district judge in Tennessee long before he ran for president. You know, Harry S. Truman, President Truman, you know, what a key figure in the 20th century. He was first a county judge in Missouri.
And how often do we just ignore those races? Because mm-hmm. a lot of times they've been made so-called nonpartisan, so it's hard to even find out what the people believe.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people don't vote. And yet that person you vote for county judge,
mm-hmm.
in 25 years, he may be running for president.
Do you know that only three of the presidents were had not served in an elected office before they ran for president?
Wow.
The only three, they were all three retired generals, Zachary Taylor, Ulysses S. Grant, and Dwight D. Eisenhower. Those are the only three presidents who hadn't served at some lower level of elected office first.
You know, you made a great point in that blog post too, Hal,
mm-hmm.
that lots of times the people that we elect to these local and county offices, they may not go any further outside the county,
mm-hmm.
but they become leaders in the party, and those people decide on the party platform on a national level.
Yeah.
You know, I know because you've gone as a delegate to the national party convention. They decide on the party platform. They decide on who gets to run for different races.
They decide who they're going to support and who the party itself is going to endorse.
It becomes very powerful. So, look,
right.
Those small races are important. If you don't know who to vote for, if you happen to be, for example, a conservative, search on conservative voter guide and put the name of your county.
That's right.
You know, if you're liberal, you can do the same thing. But, you know, anyway.
And
but you search for voter guide,
mm-hmm.
and look for organizations that you trust to give you some advice. Whatever you do, get out there and vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. This is important because, you know, think about what we read in the book of First Samuel, where the people rejected God's leadership and said, we want a king so we can be like other nations. You know, and I heard something one time somebody had on their website, a little clip where they took that quote from 1 Samuel, we want a king so we can be like other nations, and then juxtaposed it with the quote from, what did the Jews say to Pilate? We have no king but Caesar.
Wow.
Wow. Boy, that's just, you hear those two things in balance. But you know what? What did the prophet warn them when they said, we want a king so we can be like other nations? He said, well, this is what your king is going to do. And he lays all these abusive things out. And he says, you know, this is the way kings behave. And yet the people did choose, and they did it anyway.
They gave up their freedom.
They willingly gave
up their freedom. Look, folks, let's not willingly give up our freedom. We have been blessed. I hear people say, I'm moving to a different country. We've been to the other country.
Honestly, yeah.
We've traveled all over the country.
We've
traveled all over the world. Tell you what, folks.
Yes.
We are blessed to live in the country we live in.
Yes.
It really is one among the freest on earth.
Yes.
And let's preserve it. The way that you do that, get out and vote tomorrow.
That's right.
And teach your kids why to vote and how to vote and what to vote about. Thank you for joining us.
We do appreciate it. You know,
we better tell them you can find that blog post at raisingwomen.com.
That's right. It's right there at the top of our page right now, or it will be down a couple of notches if you are listening to this later this same week. And if you are listening to this same week, remember, Friday and Saturday of this week, the 7th and 8th of November in 2014, we're going to be in Raleigh, and we would love to see you there.
It's not too late to sign up.
That's right.
You can even show up at the door.
All right. So once again, we appreciate you joining us as we talk about making biblical family life a practical reality. And we do appreciate your support and your interest, and look forward to hearing from you soon.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.